Board of Education meeting Tuesday, November 15th. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a motion to approve the amended agenda?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. A couple of things to report on this evening. First off, about a week or two ago, I attended, together with Trustee Marshall, the Undoing Racism Workshop. This is really weird in front of you.
Yeah. He can't hear you?
You can't hear me?
You can move closer.
Come to the table, you three.
Come to the table at this rate.
Come right up to the table. Yeah. Is that better? Okay. Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago I attended an Undoing Racism Workshop. Our PR rep from the school, Lisa Ritalik, had arranged this. She had been talking about this workshop. That's something that she had attended many years ago and felt that in the current climate, amongst other things, the issues we're facing in the school, diversity was something that needed to be looked at, and Undoing Racism was a good way for us to get a deeper understanding of the topic. 13 members of the district signed up for this workshop, and I deliberated about how I would give my report today, because to talk about it for 5 minutes does it a huge disservice. And on the other hand, I couldn't spend 90 minutes talking about this workshop, which I could very easily do. Suffice it to say, people inform me that, you know, it would be transformational, it would be profound, and it was all of that. It was moving, it was eye-opening. And I want to encourage all of our board members, when you have the opportunity to attend this workshop, that we do. I was proud of this district for what we did. Not only was I there with Trustee Marshall, but we were led by some leaders in our organization. Dr. Montesano attended, Dr. Winsome Gregory attended, and you know, the thing that really moved me were there are a number of members of staff who also attended, of our senior admin team. And I want to call them out tonight for what they have done. Yesenia Polanco, Audrey Cabell, Leo Macias, Lisa Ritalik, Joe McCora, Dave Johnson, Lucy Pichardo, Tom DeLeo, Don Zella Milligan, and as I said, Dr. Montesano, myself, James Marshall, and Dr. Gregory. Now, this is not to cast aspersions on anybody who did not attend. I think that clearly the commitment of this, it's 2.5 days of solid commitment to this workshop. But these were just the trailblazers. We had a debrief just this past week with this group. That was fascinating. Everybody was really, really galvanized and really believes that this is something that we pursue. I think I would encourage the board to attend. I'm not sure with the information that I gleaned, that we all gleaned from this workshop, how we can lead this district with not understanding the roots of racism and understanding just exactly how we can tackle this without understanding, as I said, the roots of it. So as a leadership, as leaders of this school community, we absolutely do need to, I would encourage you to dedicate yourself to doing this at some point in time. Just to call out something that was profound to me, Green Meadow Waldorf, and I apologize for going on, but just some things I want to touch on. Green Meadow Waldorf was there. They had about 10 representatives from the school district. And I believe when in talking to them, they said they had, it's something like 10 students of color at Green Meadow Waldorf, but they felt it was important enough for them to understand how they reached these 10, so it might have been more than 10, I don't know, it wasn't more than, say, 20, 30, 40, right? And I thought, well, you know, this is what we need to be doing. It's all about how do we develop a culture within our school district of understanding for dealing with diversity. So that's all I will say, and I know that members of our board have expressed interest. There are other sessions, and we'll work towards making that happen. On a less heavy note, I attended the Red and Black dinner, and so I'd just like to publicly extend congrats to all the athletes who were acknowledged. And again, it's so heartwarming to see the relationship that builds up between coach and athletes. It really is something to observe. And I remember when my child was young, my doctor said to me, listen, get your kid in an athletic, into a sport, because there's a bonding and a camaraderie that builds when you're on a team sport. And you could see that. You see that at these Red and Black dinners. So kudos to all the coaches who give up their time to coach, and to all those athletes who we recognized that evening. That's my report. Dr. Montesano.
Yes, and to the board members, the date is March 5th to 7th is the next opportunity at Rockland Community. There's supposed to be a third one, which that is a Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, and they're also trying to plan one for a follow-up, which they have not yet announced, but would be a weekend. Just as a forewarning, one thing that NIAC's presence brought to that occasion was a lot of tears. So I would suggest that you bring some tissues along with you. We had a lot of emotional moments together.
I will go in March, Jim. I've got it on my calendar, and I'm in to go.
We're also hoping to open up some seats, and I'll be working with Carlene to look at what our finances look like in area staff development, to open up some seats for staff members as well. You know that in the most recent NTA agreement that we are in the process of developing a professional academy that will, in our minds, be able to serve the needs of the district, where we can develop courses that are directly related to the mission of the NIAC Public Schools, utilizing, in some occasions, district staff. And Dr. Gregory and I are chairing this committee of teachers, and we're about to focus in on several courses for the spring semester, one of which we're hoping to do is to, and I'll be talking to Phyllis Frank about seeing if we can't replicate a Undoing Racism workshop, which would be for course credit for staff, that would be built into that that activity as well. I also want to mention that I attended just a little while back at the middle school, the SOAR program, which many of you are aware of, which is really a grassroots effort of several of our graduates that are working particularly with Black African American middle school students. The larger focus is on male, although it is a blend of females and males. And I'll share with you, it's really heartwarming to see the mentors that are there, really, and one of which is Claudette Clark, a former member of the Board of Education. But there is a real focus to and structure to the activities. It's beyond just academic assistance, which is part of it, but it's really about development of cultural development, how to handle themselves, how to self-manage themselves. It's really a very well-thought-out approach. In attendance was Assembly Zabrowski and Assemblywoman Jaffe, who have helped finance that through a special bullet grant. In addition, later this week we have a meeting. I've had an initial meeting with NIAC College. They have received a grant, which I think I gave the board some information, called the STEP program. This is a program that's going to be embedded in science, math, technology, and mathematic type of career activities. This too will be designed for middle school and high school students, particularly students that are have economic disadvantage. We're hoping to attract probably about 50 students that would be engaged in both after-school time, Saturday type of academy type of work, and embed in. And they have a whole course design once we have some. This thing gets off the ground, which we hope will be by January. I'll provide the board with some additional information. My last thing I'd like to do, we were not together back at the end of October, but the week of October 24th to 28th was the school board recognition week. And there is a proclamation by the board, by the governor, which I will not take the time to read tonight. You know how wonderful you are. All of you know the amount of time it takes to really be an effective board member, which each of you are. I know the hours that you take to read all the documentation that's coming forward, so much is happening in public education arena around the country, certainly in the state, around Common Core, around the issues of testing, issues of diversity, not to mention trying to, how do you manage the finances of a district under these economic conditions, the tax cap that you have to deal with, and so forth. And I know this board is dedicated to being an effective board, just based on several weeks ago where you gave up an entire Saturday of a retreat just to work on management and procedures of yourselves and looking, you know, self-reflecting and so forth. So I can share with you, I'm very proud to be, you know, working in concert with you. I do have a little certificate that I'd like to pass out. It's suitable to put on the refrigerators. And I'm a little embarrassed because other years I've been able to get you a little umbrella.
Where's my little grocery bag?
Next time you go to the New York School Board Convention, they have eliminated those little tokens that I was able to get. I could not find something that would be, you know, suitable for that. So what we have is a certificate.
Thank you, Jim.
Blankets one time.
And that is my review.
Oh, yeah, we covered ourselves.
The blankets were good.
Thank you.
That is my report.
Thank you. So I'd like to start off by saying, after the election on the 9th, I was concerned about the school environment and if there'd be a harsh dichotomy between students after an explosion of social media and hearing about protests in the streets. How would students be reacting? And I was very pleased to see a very civil and mature response from students, having very in-depth conversations and really asking each other what they thought about the election and what they felt like the future of America would be. So I was very proud of NAIC students, both underclassmen and upperclassmen alike. And I was also very happy to see that we had a mock election in the school, and there was a line going all the way out the hallway with kids waiting to vote. So that was very promising. In regards to student council, there's a state conference for student council members in the Catskills, where we can talk about different ways to run our councils and ideas for fundraisers and so forth. So I believe myself and several other students will be attending that, which I'm really excited to go to and learn from other students in the state. And we met with a representative from Aramark, which is our food, the company that we have a contract with for food. And the students have agreed that we would love for them to be selling coffee and warm drinks in the morning. So that was a good step forward. And in regards to the committee for class rank, I'm working with Mr. Teasdale currently and Ms. Aiva. We're going to be administering a survey, hopefully, by next week to all the students to hear about their opinions about the future of class rank in our school. That's my report.
Thanks, Isabel. Let's move on to our Board of Education report. Trustee Marshall, would you like to start?
Sure. Thank you, President Hughes.
Sorry.
Let me pass that along. I'm just going to start with the red and black that we were able to attend. One of the things that our athletic director did this year was to have the MCs be student-driven. And I thought that was an interesting distinction for bringing the students together and making it a peer-led event. I'm always impressed by our athletic department. And as it was mentioned a few moments ago by Karen, it's refreshing to have students involved in group sports. Nothing does better than to round a student than to have them involved, and it was interesting to see Victoria be as part of our tennis team. So that was good. So kudos to all of our coaches, all of our student athletes, and our athletic director, and all of our leaders in that area. I was privileged to participate on the October 21st with the seminar that NIAC College had coordinated with the NIAC Public Schools with our own Dr. Montesano on with Dr. Eric Mazur, Enhancing Teaching Effectiveness. I felt like I wanted to go into education after I went to that in that seminar. Dr. Mazur was just riveting, and I was somewhat intimidated having my superintendent on my right and one of his former students who's a superintendent of, was it Elmsford Public Schools?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Just some notes from
you
that.
You held your own just fine.
I did. I held my own just fine. All right. Just some notes from that experience, some quotes from Dr. Mazur. And if you ever have a chance to participate or listen to one of his lectures, he is quite riveting. His quote, "We are doomed if we think education is transformation of information. Education equals the assimilation of information. Focus on assimilation versus transferring of information." One of the interesting clips he showed was a group of students interacting in a classroom. They were all talking and collaborating, and come to find out, it was a test, a math test. Mm-hmm. And you would never know it by looking at those students that they were participating in a math test. But it wasn't an American school. I believe it was a European school. But fascinating, and I was not able to participate in any of the afternoon sessions, but again, I was pleased and privileged to be a part of that group. In terms of the workshop that we attended, Karen had already recognized everyone who attended, but I want to give special recognition to Lisa, who really pulled us together. I attended that workshop 20 years ago, and one of the unique things about this workshop 20 years later is twofold. It's where NIAC was then, 20 years ago, and it's where NIAC is now, 20 years later. That group, the composition of that group was unique. You had a judge in Rockland County, you had a member of law enforcement, you had two school districts, one private, one public. You could not have orchestrated, and you had the Pride Center, the Rockland Pride Center represented. So you could not possibly have orchestrated that composition of individuals to look at race in a real raw way. And while it's a Friday night, a Saturday all day, and a Sunday, it goes by like that. Because you are really just riveted and undone by what you learn about race, regardless of your racial background. You come away from that event. And I have to say, our own Dr. Montesano, your reaction to that workshop was so palpable for me personally, and you, Dr. Gregory. You know, I learned so much from you and interacting with you in the breakouts. It was just mind-blowing. You felt like, really, like you had just done like an eight-hour session in a weekend and coming away with seeing the potential for our school district in terms of what you can do once everyone who works with students has an opportunity to see how you can change and undo racism. It was powerful. I'm going to close out my report because I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but I never read People magazine. I never read People magazine. But I was in the doctor's office, and I usurped a copy of People magazine. And this is a very telling article about what the influence of a teacher can do. The title is Saved by Opera, a troubled kid who spent time in juvenile detention and is now singing at the Met. His middle name is Speedo, Ryan Speedo Green, didn't have anyone's idea of a happy childhood raised in rough Yorktown, Virginia housing project by a single mother. So as soon as I saw that title, I thought, oh, we have that represented in our own community. We have that at Waldron Terrace. If you had participated in the Homework Club, lots of single moms there. He had become troubled and violent, was put in class for the worst of the worst, as he puts it, at age 10. On the first day, he threw a desk at his teacher. There was blind anger in me, he says. Luckily, there was also resilience, determination, and a very big voice. Against all odds, Green grew up to be an opera singer. He's now starring in La Boheme at New York City's Metropolitan Opera and is the subject of a new biography, Sing for Your Life. You can overcome things, he says, and pursue your dreams. It wasn't an easy road. At 12, he landed in juvenile detention after pulling a knife on his mom. It was there that he decided to channel that rage into other things, nurtured by Betty Hughes, the same teacher he'd once aimed his desk at. She gave me a constructive discipline. He discovered he could sing and won a musical scholarship to the University of Hartford School. He went on to win the Met's prestigious National Council auditions in 2011. Now when he's not performing around the world, Green, 30, lives in Vienna with his wife, Irene, whom he married this past spring. And here's the critical piece of this article. He credits his success to Hughes and other teachers who told me, and here's the thing, I wasn't just a number, just a color. I could be somebody. He still can't quite believe who that is. I wake up every morning, he says, and pinch myself. So the difference that a teacher makes in a child's life, a difference that a teacher who understands difference and race and class and able to channel, that was just like so compelling to me. So I will end on that inspiring note.
Thank you very much, Trustee Marshall. Very profound. Thank you. So who wants to follow that act? Don't forget Damon.
I defer to Damon.
Trustee Bender.
President Hughes, thank you very much. And thank you to the Liberty family for hosting us here this evening. I'll be rather brief. I did attend the Red and Black dinner. I echo the comments that Trustee Marshall and yourself had made. I wasn't involved too much in athletics in high school, so the extent of my involvement was coaching the Powder Puff girls in flag football. So it was interesting to see the connection that the athletes and the coaches make. So it was an interesting night. I had a good time. The last point I'll make about that, and I had commented to you, President Hughes, a number of times, the kids look so young. And I know that there were some, I think they must have been 7th grade or 8th graders in the mix there, but made me feel a little bit old. But to think that any one of our kids, or mine in particular, who are on the younger side, could be heading towards that and participating in a Red and Black dinner soon would be amazing. So I think that was a great night. Just to tack on to what Indigo had mentioned earlier, I hadn't realized that there was a mock vote that took place in the high school. I think that's fantastic. Hopefully that everyone who's actually eligible to exercise their civic duty did so, regardless of who you voted for. I think it's an important issue to get out to the community and make sure everyone's participating. So I thought that was fantastic. And I mean, the last thing I'll say is happy Thanksgiving to all who celebrate in the upcoming week. So the year's flying by extremely fast. So before you know it, it'll be 2017. So with that, happy Thanksgiving to all, and that is my report.
Thank you, Trustee Bender. let's go to Trustee Robuck.
Thank you, President Hughes. Follow the lead set by Trustee Bender here and be brief. I will not comment on the Black and Red dinner because everyone said anything I could possibly say, but I did enjoy going. I did want to point out one thing. I did see in the announcements that in response to in our district's support of the American Education Week, that on November 22nd, we are going to be having the open house. And I was fortunate with a lot of the board members to do our kind of board open house with opening day, visiting a number of schools, and it was just so thrilling and exciting and great to see our teachers and staff at work. Great to see the bright little minds happy for the first day of school. So I'm at least doing my part encouraging whatever parents in my neighborhood, and I'm saying this for the podcast, for those who may listen to this, to please come out on that day if possible to see your tax dollars at work, to see your teachers at work, to see your students receiving such a great education from this wonderful district. And then lastly, Dr. Gregory and the staff's continued work on STEM is just so impressive, and I don't know when our next workshop readout is, but I did catch a presentation, I think, that was on the web for spring 2016. I was just flipping around on the website and reading up on that, trying to get my engineering degree re-energized. So it was very good to just see that work continues, and I just wanted to commend her and the staff and the folks that are doing such great work on STEM. which leads me to my very last bullet. Shameless plug, I am still part of Inspire NIAC, and on March 25th is their annual 10th annual casino night coming up, March 25th, 2017. So please look out for announcements with regards to that, and I'm hoping the community comes out and supports that wonderful organization. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Trustee Rock. Trustee Maraschino.
All right, thanks. So we haven't had a board meeting in a while, so just some events and things that I've attended. Wanted to give a big kudos to the Upper NIAC PTA for their trunk or treat. I don't think they'd had it before the last board meeting, but they had, I think, over 400 kids there. It was pretty amazing. So they did a great job for that. And I also had to just give a little kudos to Mr. McCora. I think I sent most of you the picture. He was dressed up as Elmo on Friday. So I think he's going to be Mickey Mouse tomorrow or something like that. So he just brings so much energy. I mean, the kindergartners and then the little siblings that were coming up, it was just amazing. Out there weaving all morning. And I think somebody was Cookie Monster, but I don't know who was in that costume. I also wanted to mention the Honor Society induction that I attended. It's just always so impressive to see how many of our students are doing so well academically, and the ceremony is so nice, and the chamber orchestra is there, and a couple of teachers are recognized. So that was just a really inspiring evening. I also attended the NIAC Center Legacy Gala, which was really, really nice. Yes. Susan Wilmink and Thomas Schneck were the honorees this year. They are both, parents in our school district. Their boys are both in the high school now. And they are just such generous, giving individuals. So it was just a beautiful night. I mean, the center was packed. It was all decorated in purple, a Prince theme. The food was great there. The auction was amazing. So many people donated wonderful items. So it's just such an amazing community evening, and just really hearing about all of them. They always talk a little bit about their programs before school and after school, and profile some of the families that they serve who've working multiple jobs and minimum wage jobs, and really it's just inspiring to hear about all the work that they do. So that was great. Then I know Michael's not here, but Michael and I got to attend. Kaylee Travers had on Veterans Day, she had a little ceremony showcasing the work that she did at Valley Cottage. So her work was beautiful. I mean, the flagpole looks great, and the monument, she put all red, white, and blue rocks around them. But even more than that, she had a really nice group of veterans, in uniform and supporters there. She was so well-spoken, leading a ceremony, having her grandfather come up to talk. So, so thankful to us. I don't think we did anything. She did all the work. But, it was just, her project was great, and it was, I've known her for a while. She's the same age as Justin. It was just really impressive to see how maturely she handled this project. She also had the kids creating care packages and letters for overseas troops and sending packages. So it was so comprehensive, and wow. I was really impressed by her. So that was great. And then the last event I wanted to mention was sort of a post-election event. It was very last minute, and I kind of was wishing that maybe I had shot out an invitation to all of you guys, because it was on Facebook the morning of, but it was the Thursday after the election at NIAC Center. The NIAC Pride division of VCS organized it was a community forum for people to just gather and share their thoughts and concerns post-election, particularly LGBTQ society members. Everyone was invited. There was also some representation from Rockland Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. It was, like I said, I think it was just posted up on Facebook that morning, and the center was packed. Well over 100 people there. I was really just listening and absorbing, people going up to the microphone and talking about their thoughts post-election. They pretty much said they would have done this either way, regardless of who won. And, essentially you're hearing some concerns sort of about some of the divisive behavior throughout the election, and, just people expressing concerns sort of about what's next in regards to, color and religion and sexual orientation, and, we're entering a new phase, new president coming in. So but what I really saw as a positive note was I feel like not only there, but you know, other meetings that I've been on, people are sort of looking to say, what can I do to support what I believe in? You know, people maybe who haven't gotten involved in advocacy are feeling, I think, very inspired to come out and get involved. And, you know, sort of as a member of this school board with all of you guys, kind of makes me feel very proud to be up here, being able to work with a district and a group of people who are so sort of focused on, you know, positive issues. And it made me, I wanted to read a little bit because I went to our website to read our mission statement, which, you know, it's there and we read it, but there was just so much good stuff in there that I think sometimes people forget that kind of ties in with focusing on diversity issues. So I'm just going to read a little bit about it. It says, we, the students, parents, community, and staff of the Nyack School District value the pursuit of scholastic excellence, but then the richness of our diverse community, harmonious relationships among individuals and groups, partnerships among students, staff, parents, and community, respect for self and others, responsible, ethical behavior that engenders trust, ongoing involvement in local and global issues, and a safe, nurturing environment. I skipped over a few, but it was just sort of reading that, and then we have this piece on how do we envision embodying these values, and there's pieces in there about spirit of collaboration and cultural appreciation and ethical behavior. So I just wanted to bring it all up because I just feel like this is kind of a unique time post-election, right? And it's just, again, looking back on what we've got in our mission statement, hearing everybody sort of talk about what we're doing with the Undoing Racism Workshop, which, you know, I'll be there in March, it just kind of reminded me that I just want to keep my ears open as possible to, I know we all feel this way, community members, what they're bringing to the forefront, what we can sort of look at to continue to focus on, you know, respecting and valuing our diversity. And there was just one little idea that I just wanted to put out there, nothing that I've really researched yet, but just one of the things that came up at the Nyack Center was the possibility of hanging up the rainbow flag, maybe particularly during like Gay Pride Month or a Gay Pride Week. So just something to kind of put out there. I think the Gay Pride Month isn't until June. You know, maybe it's something that our club at the school will come to us about. But, you know, just kind of wanted to highlight just sort of our openness as a district, I think, to listening to what, just being open to hearing what other thoughts and ideas people might have to focus on diversity and appreciation of all. And that's it.
Thanks very much, Jen. Trustee Irwin. Last name for a minute.
Thank you, President Hughes. I just have a quick report. I just want to thank all the staff at the middle school on November 7th for Back to School Night. That logistically is an incredible operation. Getting all the parents in to see all the teachers. I mean, there's eight people I think I saw that night, and obviously everybody else was there was doing the same thing and keeping it moving and getting a chance to meet all the teachers. And it's the enthusiasm, the interest, and how quickly they're able to focus. So they've been in school for a couple months, except they, you know exactly what my kid is doing and where she's going. And it's always a real interesting, positive experience to go and see, meet her teachers and see what's happening. I look forward to the teacher conference that's coming up in the elementary school soon. And I did want to say, Michael, Mark, and I last night attended the 39th Annual School Boards and Superintendents Regional Dinner. They have a dinner once a year. It's usually held over in Tarrytown, where it's Rockland, Dutchess, Westchester, Putnam, school boards and all this, the Lower Hudson superintendents and a lot of people, PTM, and that those organizations attend. They had an interesting speaker there last night talking about the politics of education. Mm-hmm. Michael Ustan is a well-known consultant in Washington, has met with a lot of people in the Department of Education. He's had positions in as school board member himself, he's taught education. He was a Connecticut's commissioner of higher education and served in various capacities in Washington. And basically his whole speech was on with this somewhat unanticipated result of the election, what's going to happen to education. So I wanted to mention some of his points because I think it's not just election driven was really his point, but it, certainly that had a huge impact. But his point was, based on this new administration that's coming in, some of the backlash from this whole standards-based assessments and standards-driven curriculum, and also the large impact of changing demographics in the school districts. I mean, he made there was a few minutes of his talk speaking about how demographics are completely changing educational process mm-hmm. in the United States. But that we can anticipate that the state of education and the federal government's involvement in education is probably going to pretty radically change. It's apparent that this new administration has a very much hands-off opinion about education. So a lot of the regulations and a lot of the federal oversight that's been happening in the last year, he's anticipating is going to really ratchet back quite a bit. And there probably will not be a lot of funding diverted to federal education programs. So the result of that is going to ultimately be this is coming back to the states. And the states are probably going to have a lot more involvement in terms of what is being analyzed, what's being taught. And you can potentially see, you know, impact to some of the funds, the Title I, Title IX funds that are coming. I thought it was quite interesting because he made a point that in New York State, you have a very robust education system. New York State Department of Education is very robust, as opposed to some other states that really invest hardly anything in their education mm-hmm. systems. So the impact to us may be slightly less than across the country, but it was a very interesting speech in light of what has happened in the last week and a half, and I think a lot of people had obvious concerns sitting there as to really what was going to happen now, and are they going to completely undo everything that's been done. But I think his ultimate point was this is an opportunity for us as local school participants to really look for opportunities to develop programs, to really sort of steer our own course and as much as we possibly can mm-hmm. to the project-based learning, the you know, getting away from the standards and taking the opportunity to fill the gaps that are coming with what we consider to be creative, what he calls clinical education, which is a lot of this community support, internships, training programs, mentoring programs, and things like that. So it was a good speech. I enjoyed it. I find these dinners to be always very informational, and it certainly was timely and apropos to the current situation and what was happening in the last couple of weeks. And that's my report. Thank you.
All right. Trustee Michael Mark could not join us tonight. He had a conflict, but he did ask me. There were three topics he wanted me to raise on his behalf, so I'm going to read them out. As a board member for Rockland 21C, I was pleased to hear a report from Julie Cassell about the Nyack Family Resource Center's work in the parent-child home program. The program provides visitors, who read with the children and help parents and guardians with teaching strategies. The program also provides advocacy to families who need assistance in navigating the school district. Thanks to Julie, the home visitors, 21C, and the Nyack School District for cooperation and collaboration on a growing and successful initiative. He was also at the Gold Award, so he asked me to read this. Congratulations to Kaylee Travers on her Girl Scout Gold Award project to refinish the war monuments in front of Valley Cottage Elementary and fundraise and install a new flagpole. The dedication on Veterans Day was a wonderful reminder of the good work that can be done through the energy of an individual on a local level to make our community a better place. Congratulations to the cast, crew, and costume makers of Alice in Wonderland, a funny and playful production. That was the fall/winter production at the high school. Well done to cast, crew, and costume makers. And that's his report. Are there, Dr. Montesano, any responses to citizens' prior proposals, questions, and concerns?
There are none.
Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns? There was one name on the list. Kevin, I'm sorry. Could you see? Is there a list?
Sorry, thanks.
A lot of people do.
Oh, is that why you made it so I can't read it? It's okay. All right, so, all right, is there none? Any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on any of our workshop items this evening? Okay, Dr. Montesano.
Okay, under workshop, as you can see, we have a number of items to go through. Item 2.2 is our second reading of the revised policy 1500, public use of school facilities. The last meeting we had, you had an opportunity to be introduced to that policy, which I think does a very comprehensive job of framing out how the district would intend to make decisions about who has access to your buildings. There's some renewed fee scales to, you know, basically reflect a lot of your new fields that are being developed, which we anticipate having some renewed interest. So without having to go into great detail, I just want to give the board any opportunity for any additional feedback that they would like to see or anything you would like us to further you know, take a look at or revise, and then perhaps at the next meeting in December, we can have it on for the third reading and potential adoption by the board.
Any comments? I read through it. I don't have any issues or concerns.
I don't have any issues with
anyone? No comment.
Looked good.
Okay.
Item 2.3, this is the first reading of the revised policy 2352, rules of order. This really came about, as you remember, in the board retreat when we were talking about the board adheres to Robert's Rules of Order. It was noted that the current policy, which was adopted in 1998, I believe, referred to, I think, the eighth edition of Robert Rules of Order. It since has been revised numerous times. So rather than, I think the board, if I recall correctly, would prefer to have the most recent edition of the Roberts Rules of Order, so therefore it's before you tonight with that minor addition. If that is the only change you're interested in making to that policy, you may consider later tonight simply adopting that policy rather than have to put it up back up next time, or we can just put it on the action for the December meeting, whatever you prefer.
Thanks, Dr. Montesano. It's not on for action tonight.
No, it's not. I didn't want to be presumptuous.
Okay. Well, the only reason I might not is because Michael's not here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been on there since 1998 without, you know, so I think it can wait another month.
I don't know. Maybe we need another 3 months to review.
So we'll plan to put it on for the December action.
All right.
The 2.4 is district-wide emergency response plan, and I reviewed this with you at the last meeting in October. When the state adopted its last state budget, there were some amendments to the emergency response planning process to reflect, in essence, the sign of the times. And as I mentioned that evening, some of the fundamental changes, which really were not changes for our district because we have been practicing for a number of years emergency response drills beyond just fire drills. This now has it as a mandated form. They're actually backing away a little bit from fire drills and ensuring that districts have at least 4 evacuation drills a year. We do on a rotational basis in this district. We practice all of our shelters in place, et cetera. We've been doing that for, as I said, a number of years. So there's really no impact on us. There are some mandates, which again does not impact us because we have been very, and I do want to compliment Carlene, very proactive with regard to staff training. So there are some regulations and stipulations about that. Any new hiree, I think it's within 30 days, they have to be provided for some training in emergency response planning. I think those were the fundamental ones. And finally, this, and the reason it's on this workshop, it does require a 30-day opportunity for the public to review. So it's been on for that 30-day period. It's on the workshop tonight, and it's on later this evening as an action item to be adopted. The next item.
Sorry, Dr. Montesano, sure. Just going back to this, is this plan, you said it's 30 days available for public review. Is it anywhere else other than on Board Docs? Is it on our website?
It is on our website, It's mandated to be on the website also. Keep in mind, however, which was actually a point of contention when it first came out, a requirement to have our building level plans, and many districts objected to that because in essence, you'd be providing if somebody is intending to do harm to our buildings, they would have complete understanding of what our procedures are and what our drills look like. So we do not have that, but the district, which is more generic in terms of the umbrella of things that we are mandated to do, is included in there.
Yeah. And were we required to send out any sort of notification that it's actually on the website, or do we just post it?
No, we could, but that was not part of the mandate.
No, that's okay. I just wondered.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
And, you know, as you know, parents, or I think they're proactive in being interested, but typically when you have an event, that's when, you know, the people get more interested in you know, how the drills went and things of that sort. Item 2.5 is the NIAC Tower Fund, and this is really just to inform the board that we now have, which the board is aware, a revised plan that's coming from this NIAC Tower Fund group. Those pictures are on the board docs on the public side. It does continue to have the replication of the old high school's tower. What's changed is it's downsized, so we'll simply have a concession stand, a press box, and public restroom facilities. So if anybody's interested from the public, they can see those pictures up you know, on our board docs document itself. Later tonight, the board will be accepting a donation of $25,000 from that tower fund. Those $25,000 will be used actually to take these schematics that are posted into actual designs that will be sent up to the state ed for approval. And our game plan or our objective is to have these plans approved in time for us to be able to get this out to bid and hopefully get construction done over the summer. One of two things will happen this summer. Assuming that this is approved, the NIAC Tower Fund will raise enough funding to be able to build this facility, or the Board of Education will have the option to go back to its original plan, which is basically a separate press box, no tower, although it is on an alternative, you'll notice on those schematics, or alternate on your bids, and a separate facility for the bathrooms and concession stand. So,
Dr. Montesano?
Yes.
We still have the railway station photo up. Remember, we would... I'm not sure this is the actual schematic. The one we've posted on board docs, mm-hmm. is the one with the trestle that looks like a railway station.
And yeah, there should be several pictures. One should be the drawing,
pictures,
from
drawing.
Land of
yeah.
that.
Land's drawing.
Yeah, there is a drawing. We just might want to remove this one because this is not the correct representation.
Well, I thought, if I recall correctly, I'm not often look at it.
Land changed the one.
But you guys had asked me, the board had asked me to put up your original design plan. And if it has that tower on it, that is a alternate for that. That was the original, I believe, what your original design was going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, with the white tower?
Yeah, so if you take that tower off, that's really what you would have.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see. Gotcha.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because you wanted the public to be able to see what you would build if you didn't build,
if
the tower fund
didn't
come.
Okay, got it. Okay, yeah, fair point.
And at this point, I'd like to call upon Dr. Gregory. She's going to walk you through some of our assessment results from the previous year, along with some of the graduation information, graduation rate information as well. Dr. Gregory.
Okay, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Well, I have a quiz for you. So, if you had to guess, what has the most direct effect on students' achievement, what would you say?
The
superintendent.
Okay. Well, over the years, research has always identified that teachers, quality teachers, has the most direct impact on student achievement. However, that's a challenging task to try to create the conditions and the structures in school to support students when over 80%, okay, let's see this. When you look at the factors that are affecting student achievement, and as you can see, only 13% is attributed to teachers, another 7 attributed to the student school environment, and a whopping 80% is out of school. And among those out of school factors, you're looking at economics, you're looking at family issues, and also English as a second language. And in 1980, there was approximately 4.5 million students in the school system speaking English a language other than English. It has skyrocketed to almost 14 million students in 2011 and rapidly growing. Yet, these students are given 1 year to 1 year waiver, after which they're expected to perform just as well as their English dominant peers on assessments. In addition to that, you have a lot of pushback. New York State has been giving us the assessments that the students are expected to pass, and there have been a lot of pushback from parents, a lot of feedback also from educators, to say that this is unreal, unreasonable. And it takes 3 years for students, ELL students, to acquire basic social language. It takes up to 7 years for them to acquire the academic language that's required. And so it is almost an impossible task that you're asking of them. New York State, however, is listening and has made some changes in general to the 3-8 assessments. They have acquired, they're collaborating with a new vendor, and those vendors are very much collaborative in working with teachers and other educators to create the 3-8 assessment. They're listening more to educators than simply putting the test together. And in doing so, they're are less assessments, less questions on the assessments, and also students are given unlimited time in order to complete the test. As long as the student is working productively, that student is able to continue to do the test. And in addition to that, the state has decided to release 75% of the questions. At one point, they decided not to release those questions, but they changed their mind because they realized that it is beneficial for the school systems to at least take a look at the test and how the students did on the test in order to inform instruction. And they're releasing those questions earlier as well. Now, the 2015-16 test and the 2015 test and the 2016 test in content and rigor are pretty much the same. However, with the different conditions that have been allowed, the extended time and so forth, the two assessment results cannot be really compared as apples to apples. With the accommodations that were made, we still have quite a few of our students who opted out of the test. 37% opted out of the ELA, 41% out of math, and on the state level, 21% opted out. The impact of the changes that were incorporated into the test left us with, on the statewide level, there was a gain in terms of the percentage of students passing the ELA, a 6.6% gain and a 1% for the math. The greatest accomplishments, however, were achieved on the third and fourth grade level, where there was a 10.9% increase in ELA on the third grade level and an 81.1% on the fourth grade level. The contributors to that is the reduced number of questions, the unlimited time. However, these students have been receiving the instruction, Common Core instruction, since kindergarten and first grade, and it is showing here. In NIAC, we have our students performing quite well. They have outperformed the state and the county in all grade levels except 7th and 8th. And when we looked at the proficiency rate of each of the cohorts, we noticed that there was an increase on all of grade levels except 7th. And I'll touch back on 7th in a moment. Our Hispanic students also outperformed the state in all the levels except 7th grade. And the proficiency rate of each of those cohorts going from grade to grade also increased, except for 5th going to 6th grade and 6th going to 7th grade. The same pattern as you see for black students from 5th to 6th and 6th to 7th. Also, they didn't gain there, but again, everywhere else. And black students outperformed the state in all of the grades except 5, 6, and 7th as well. Consistent with across the state, we noticed that the ELLs did not achieve proficiency level that was registered. However, it took some time to dig deeper because we knew that our students are doing fairly well, that they are improving. And what we noticed was that with using the scale scores within the levels, going from a low level one to a high level one, low level or high level one to a low level two, the students did make gains. Our special education students also outperformed the state in third, fourth, and fifth, and we did see an improvement, however, only from third to fourth. Economically disadvantaged students had the same pattern from 56 and 67 as our black student and our Hispanic students, and they outperformed the state as well in fourth and fifth. In terms of the pattern that you're seeing, I believe there are a few things that are happening here. We did have 51.6% of our students opting out of the seventh grade. So that, I'm sure, had a significant impact. We also have students in the middle school who are sight students, students with interrupted formal education, and also ELLs. We looked and we noticed that with the curriculum, there were some areas that needed to be revamped, and it was. And from the seventh to the eighth grade, the rigor we weren't quite satisfied with, and that adjustment was made as well. It's not atypical either when you have students going from one building to another to see somewhat of a decline. And so we are looking at ensuring that we have better articulation between fifth and sixth grade for our students. In terms of math, we also saw quite a bit of gains. NIAC outperformed the state and the county on all grade levels again, except seventh. Proficiency rate of the cohorts of students also increased in except in third grade, fifth grade, and seventh grade. Now, the Hispanic students, they did perform well in terms of outperforming the state in all grade levels except third and seventh grade, and the proficiency rate, we see the same pattern again with 5 to 6 and 6 to 7. They outperformed in all other areas except those levels. Our black students, the same pattern with 5th and 6th and 6th to 7th, but outperforming on all other levels. The cohort of students did well except on those levels. Consistent, again, the L's, the same thing I said before, with in terms of not seeing the gains for English language learners reflected in the proficiency rate of level 3 or level 4, but there were definite gains for all those students on level 1 and level 2. Special education students also, they outperformed the state in grade 3, 4, and 5, and for those moving from grade 3 to 4, we saw the improvements as well. economically disadvantaged students outperform the state in 4 and 5, and their proficiency of the cohort, we saw improvement from grade 7 to grade 8. As for our regions, as even though we have the Common Core, most of the courses, most of the assessments are transitioned to the Common Core, our students are doing very, very well. As you can see, for Common Core Algebra 1 in the middle school, 100% of our students passed. Common Core Algebra 1 for the high school went from a 58 to a 74% of our students passing. Geometry went from 71.5 to 85.5, and Common Core Algebra 2, given the first time this year, we have 74% of our students passing. The English regions, we are transitioning to Common Core English, and our students have done very well there as well. And for the living environment, we moved that from the high school to the middle school, and our students had a 98.2% of passed. 98.2% of the students passed the test. So again, that's significant.
Okay. If you could explain so you've got MS Living Environment 98, but then you've got Living Environment underneath 79.
Okay.
What's that? And same with the region. If you could explain the ones that are not highlighted.
Okay. The middle school living environment is we moved it from the high school, and it's now being taken in the middle school. The living environment, the 82 and 79, those are the students who took it in the high school. Those are the students in the high school. The last of the students who are taking it in the high school, because going forward, it will be given in the middle school, and the only students who will be taking it will be those who did not pass it in the middle school, in the high school. Okay? Hunter.
What did that mean?
Because the students, those are the students who did not pass it before. The region's geometry is being phased out. And so from the students who took it, the region's geometry is now being replaced by Common Core geometry.
So only more than
So, all right, so the region's geometry, you were saying, so the 40% of students who passed region's geometry in 2015, 2016, those are the kids who were taking it over again, and only 40% of the kids who were taking it over. So 60% of them got it. It just jumps out at you because that's a, got it, okay.
Because there's so few students, it makes a drastic difference.
Majority of the kids took the Common Core.
That's
the bottom line. And it's a very, typically, the region's geometry group tends to be the students that have a little bit less aptitude for math. Those are the ones that stuck with the regions.
Any other questions? Okay. All right, so we are extremely happy to see the results from the middle school, especially because we had some challenges when we had the Algebra 1 course. Parents had some concerns, and all those concerns were addressed, and we had 100% of the students who took the test passing the test. So our students are doing very, very well. And there's overall, between both the Algebra 1 and the Common Core Geometry, you're talking about a 23.8% increase overall in that area in the high school. And the primary reason behind the differences you're seeing and the increase that you're seeing is I believe that the teachers and the students have gotten much more comfortable and confident in working with the Common Core Learning Standards. And the support that has been given to the staff all along is helping that regard as well. In terms of our graduation rate, these are you have 5 required courses in order to pass. However, the state opened up other additional pathways, 4.1 pathways, 4 of the core subjects that we just saw over here, as well as one of these pathways. It's given more of an option for students to be able to graduate. And at this point, this is a 4-year cohort for the high school students.
students in Nyack High School. And the 2015-16, 86% is an unofficial result because the results of this year does not get posted until December. But it's a reading from what we have, the graduates that we have right now, we have 86%. And as you can see, regardless of the increase in SIFE students, regardless of the increase in the Common Core, regardless of all the increases, our students continue to perform very, very well.
And what you don't see, just to add a couple of things. One is, if we had up some previous years, you would be seeing graduation rates down in the 70%. We had a very nice trajectory over the last several years of our overall graduation rates. The other thing, and this is really back to Dr. Gregg, one of Dr. Gregg's first slide, is one of the impactful things that is happening at the high school is our ENL population has doubled in size in about a two-year period. In addition, within that ENL ENL group, we have now a fairly sizable cohort of SIFE students. These are students that are coming to us first year, typically from another country, and have significant interruption in formal education. And some types of students that we have, they're basically functioning at a reading level in their own language in an elementary level. So here they are coming to our country, to our new school, trying to learn a new language in a very brief period of time, subject to the standards and the Regents test that we have. And I really do want to thank and commend Dr. Gregory and Audrey Cabell. In a very short period of time, we now have a very structured program up at the high school to adapt ourselves to the needs of these students. So it is a very, very difficult task to get these kids in a four-year period of time. Oftentimes, they're juniors that we need to try to get to graduation in a short period of time. So I point that out while the 86 doesn't look as good as the 86 perhaps in 2013, I would suggest to you that even that brief period of time, the population at the high school is changed fairly significantly. So the fact that we're holding our own, to me, is really a credit to the high school staff, Ms. Saiva, obviously Dr. Gregory in the curriculum office as well.
I have a question. So that would, thank you for that explanation. That would explain for the SIFE population would explain for your Hispanic and Latino. Could you offer something in terms of the economically disadvantaged because the scores are similar?
Sure. First of all, with the economic disadvantage, very often there's overlap. So many of those Hispanic Latino students, for example, that we're seeing are also in that category of economically disadvantaged. Okay. And of all the variables up there, the one that is probably the most, and I know Dr. Gregory likes to use the word stubborn, because of those social economic variables, and this goes back to James Coleman's study in 1965, it's a very difficult task to overcome, which is why, you know, what we do know is that concept or construct of academic optimism, trying to focus on efficacy, trying to focus on trustful relationships, understanding diversity of our staff. Those are the things, and holding high academic standards that we believe will, hopefully you'll see some improvements to cut across. But those tend to be our most challenging students to bring about, you know, large levels of growth
Thank
going
you.
Forward.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay. Here you also, I wanted to just expand a little bit on what Dr. Mantizano was saying, because your LEP student, the limited English proficient students, are also some of those students, and you can see student with disability, economic disadvantage, and LEP students, sometimes they're all interchangeable. They are represented in all three areas. And we continue to provide the supports to the students that they require. We know that we have been going over the past several years, we've been doing the curriculum development and implementation, and I think it's having a direct impact on student achievement. We'll continue to align that curriculum, we'll continue the development of the Learner Active Classroom. We will also expand the PLCs and data inquiry, and we have recently started our instructional rounds, the training for instructional rounds in our district. And with professional development, that will be continued as well for all, including administrators, and providing guidance and integrating the curriculum into and materials into the classroom, providing also the in-school embedded support for the teachers, not just the pull-out workshop, but also having someone work with the teachers in their own classroom, and making sure that we have the instructional materials for our ENL and our special ed students, and that they are also involved in the curriculum development, making the curriculum adaptable for those students. Expanding our bilingual classes, we did that this year. I think we have the K-1-2 in Liberty at this point. And working with our SCIFE students in both the middle school and high school, because that population has exploded. And providing after school summer program and social and emotional support as necessary. This is providing support on all levels for students in order to make sure that they are successful. Questions?
Any questions for Dr. Gregory? Any immediate?
Question. Yes, I have questions. Thank you.
Trustee Marshall.
Thank you, Winston, for the comprehensive report. I'm trying to match. I just had questions really regard with the elementary to middle school transitions on slide 10 and slide 11. It was an overall question because that's where you saw some breakdown. Special ed students outperformed the state in 3, 4, and 5. No, that wasn't it. It was
the 5, 6, 7 transition?
Yeah, it was the Hispanic students outperformed the state in all grade levels except for 7. Proficiency rate of the cohort of Hispanic students also increased from grade to grade at all levels, here from 5 to 6 and 6 to 7. Black students outperform the state in all grades, 5, 6, and 7. So what is happening in that elementary to middle school transition, if you could elaborate?
Well, as I said, I think that there is a natural transition when you move from one school to the next, that you'll see a little bit of a shift. But we went through the curriculum recently and realized that there were some gaps that were the teachers were teaching the new curriculum, but there were some gaps that we have already addressed this year. So okay. That will not be something that you see moving forward.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
I have a question.
Trustee Maraschino.
Thank you so much for the presentation. So I'm just thinking about the percentage of students who are refusing the test, which went down, because you know, I imagine, especially when we're looking at our numbers and things, the more kids you have taking the test, the better gauge you have when we're putting together these statistics. So, do you think there's anything that we as a district could do to encourage the kids that are potentially going to be fine taking the test? Because, you know, I always do think that you've got some kids, and I'm going to talk a little bit about test anxiety in my presentation next, but, you know, is there anything that we're doing in terms of just educating parents and community members on the changes that have been being put into the test?
What we're up against is, as you're probably very aware, there is a very strong movement, particularly in this state, as there are in many different states, to strengthen that movement in an effort to basically do away with all standardized testing. And that really seems to be the crux of what a lot of this is about. And I would share with you that when you have, you know, first of all, when we're talking about grade levels and statistical grade levels in terms of the numbers, the unit of analysis, any shift in that group is magnified in terms of the standard error that will be reflected when you have cohorts of, you know, 20% of your kids not taking the test, 50% of your kids not taking the test. So it's very difficult for us to get a real read on the meaning of these results. And, you know, for that purpose alone, in terms of a curriculum perspective, I would love all our students to take the test because that is the best way for us to reflect on the growth or the needs we have within curriculum. So I don't believe there's a lot of validity to the results that we're showing you in those elementary grades or the middle school grades where you have those, those amounts. We have made efforts to try to reach out to parents that are opting out. Most of the responses I get when I've sent letters out is more that they feel we're antagonizing them, not respecting their rights as parents to make those decisions to opt out. So I don't know if you saw today, but the commissioner has declared that there's not going to be any changes to state testing as we know it for the next several years. And the reason for that is so that there's comparative data. I would argue that I don't think there's comparative data because we don't know from one year to the next who's taking the test, who's not taking the test. So I don't think that movement's going away. You have some parents and they have their own reasons for doing so, but have very strong positions on this issue.
Yeah.
We've been criticized even when we've allowed kids to stay in the classrooms, rather than move them to different locations and things of that sort. So I think it's kind of an uphill battle to try to convince people that this is, best for your child, and, who are we to suggest that? We think there is some value to, certainly macro level to be able to see the results of our programs and their impact is the best way because it is the one common standard that we have not only to look at ourselves within the district but also compare ourselves to other districts and try to control some of the variables of the like populations. But I don't know that that's really something that we're going to make a lot of inroads in trying to get more participation.
I have a feeling, I know I asked you the question, but I have a feeling that things are going to start changing moving forward, especially with the parents of younger kids. It's very different, like having a kindergartner and a seventh grader. The kids in kindergarten now, and all of elementary school, have had the Common Core since the beginning of their schooling. And therefore, when it's time for them to take the tests, they're going to have had this material since day one. And I think that's going to make a big difference. And I think just kind of us as school board members being out there and, just chatting with our fellow parents of students in our school about the changes and about that, I think that's a big fact that really might change people. If you've had Common Core since the start, so different.
Well, isn't it interesting also that when you look at our region for results, we get 100% participation from kids. And that's as early as, as eighth grade. Because there's a value to that, and then you for those parents that are keeping their kids out of testing through seventh grade, and their students have not had that opportunity to be in a testing situation, you wonder what that impact will be, as well.
Or maybe talking about the value too. Like I know when I've had one of my kids not do well on a certain part of one of the exams, I've been able to go in and sit down with Winston when I've really been concerned and say, what's wrong with this piece? It really has been a good indicator. For, at least one of my own kids.
And what the interesting thing is going to be is that states seem to be under the federal, may change, given what Leanne was commenting about earlier, but this 95% participation level, and will there be some, financial consequences down the road for districts like us that are not even getting close to approaching that level of participation? So.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
No. I have a couple of questions. Dr. Gregory, thank you so much for this. It's always enlightening to have this information. Just want to go back to the beginning of I was stunned by the graph you put up about the students speaking language other than English at home and the growth, the trajectory of that change in just, 20, 30 years. Oh, God, 1980 was 30 years ago. Oh, my God. Okay.
Thanks for that reminder.
I love the 80s. What I wanted to ask. I'm sorry,
we were just talking about that on the way in the car, listening to 80s on
80s. We digress. What I want to do, and Dr. Montesano, this is sort of to you, and I'm glad we have Ellen and Gina in the house, because given this, clearly we're doing things to help our grades, but a lot of this, and we see the issues with our ELL students, is going to be driven by, hopefully positively, by the program we've got at place at Liberty, which is state mandated, right? So what I was going to ask is if we could perhaps get an update either from the principal or Audrey or the teachers just at some point in time, because we've had it, this is the second or third year we've had it now, I believe, right?
to understand, 2 years now, just to sort of understand, how do we see that progressing? Is it helping? Do we sense that that's making a difference or can make a difference over the years? Because that cohort is just
well, yes and
be
no. You know, the thing you have to be mindful of is that's, without question, our most mobile population of students. So while we catch the kids, now we have a bilingual class in kindergarten, first and second grade. Those SIFE-type students are coming to us in middle school. They're coming to us in high school years. One of the things we are building in our professional academy that we're developing is a course for gen ed, general education teachers, in techniques and strategies of working with ENL students, so that if I'm a fifth grade teacher, there is no bilingual classroom, I have students that their second language or their native language is other than English, what are some ways that we can I can effectively get across the concept? We're even putting a course in introduction to Spanish to get some more of our teachers and Hispanic culture, Latino culture, as well as other cultures. But I think those are some things that hold more promise, because we don't have the ability to capture, that's a small segment of our overall ENL population. So for those students, yes, I anticipate. But even within those cohorts, we see a lot of mobility, not with us, for all those years. It's a very mobile population.
And we saw some very, very strong gains in some of those classes already. I do believe that there's a presentation, Jim, from the, coming up.
There may be. If there not, there will be.
We had one last year. Audrey Cabell gave us a presentation,
yes.
Really excellent presentation last year. It was at Upper Nyack, so it would have been around the December timeframe. So we'll probably do, if we could get just an update. I think it would be good to have that at some point.
As well as the other thing I think you'll really be is telling for you is to see the population enrollment growth that this district is experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mentioned. I remember that last.
Well,
year,
you're going to see it again. Even from last year.
Wow.
And then, so it's not just the report around. What I'm thinking is not just the report around the numbers, but also the progress that we've made.
No, I heard that part too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, good.
I take notes.
Yeah. Dr. Berger, thank you so much. Any other comments?
No.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that the AYP as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so agenda item, workshop item 2.8.
Jen Maraschino. Me.
All right.
Come
here.
This is my PowerPoint that is not beautiful. Thank you. All right. Okay, so. I wanted to just give a little recap of my trip to the NISBA, New York State School Board Association convention, which was it was really a great experience. I'm going to run through some of the different sessions that I attended and get into a little bit of detail, but just in general, other than the 7-hour drive to Buffalo in the snow, it's just a wonderful experience to really see the various school board members in our huge state that we live in. You know, we're in such a diverse state with cities and rural areas, and there were, I think, over 400 school boards represented. So it just was a great opportunity, especially when you go by yourself. You really meet a lot of people, because I just introduced myself to everybody left and right. So it was fun and very educational. So what I'm going to do is, when you get there, I got there Thursday afternoon, and the convention ended on Saturday. So essentially, you choose various sessions to attend. There are so many choices. These, I'm not going to read them all down because I'm going to go through them briefly, but these were all the sessions that I attended. The two that I put in red were the ones that I was going to talk in a little bit more in depth, just because I felt like they struck a chord with me. Maybe they're things that we haven't talked about so much, or just struck a chord with me for various reasons. So. This first session was called Test Anxiety, What Educators and School Boards Can Do to Help Students. And I think this struck a chord for me because I feel like, as a parent, you just start hearing the word anxiety a little bit more and more. You know, my niece has got anxiety. I've got friends who've got kids with anxiety. It's just becoming a more common term. You know, and it says test anxiety, but I felt like the session was really about all forms of anxiety. You know, there were a couple little definitions, bullet points about what it is, situation-specific forms of excessive anxiety, developed during testing situations, result in students experience intense worry, negative thoughts, intentions, intention across evaluative situations. This is the type of anxiety that affects a student's behaviors, cognitions, and psychology. Tests are perceived as a threat. So it's not that all anxiety is bad, but just that there are some negative forms of anxiety and that it's quite prevalent. 25 to 40% of the population are affected by test anxiety. So it's a pretty high number. A little bit about the demographics, because I thought these were important. Higher rates of prevalence found in females compared to males, but students from culturally diverse backgrounds report higher levels of test anxiety than Caucasian students, particularly at the elementary level. And you know, here we are talking about all the you know, the diversity and kids of who do not have English as a first language in our schools, so very pertinent to us, I think. And students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds apparently demonstrate significantly higher levels of test anxiety. So this was some information that they shared. And then some facts as it relates to performance. Highly test anxious students score approximately 12 points below their low anxiety peers. So it's really relating to academic performance. 60% of youth displaying test anxiety symptoms also meet criteria for anxiety disorders. So this documented impact on educational achievement. And, you know, I just feel like it's kind of interesting that that I'm talking about this right after talking about kids opting out of tests, because I think anxiety is certainly a reason that I've heard parents talk about, some parents, not all, as reasons for opting out. There was a lot of good news, though, about this topic. They talked about this MTSS. I wish I wrote down what it stood for. I do not remember. I'm sorry. But it was, you know, a system for, it's not specifically about addressing anxiety. It's just sort of an intervention, comprehensive, three-tiered model that covers all social, emotional, and behavioral domains. You know, it's sort of this, it's like a three-tiered scenario. So tier one is sort of this the screening. So what I thought was interesting is the school district that was presenting talked about doing this very brief universal screening of all of their students. They didn't show it to us or tell us exactly what it was, but there was something universally that they did to screen all their students. Oh, I guess it was this West Side Test Anxiety Scale, and offered free online. So that was sort of a tier one, and then it ran into the other tiers of sort of doing interventions with all students, and then looking for the students that sort of aren't responding to those interventions in class and working with them in a more in-depth model. So that was sort of the three tiers. But I think this says, what can school boards do on this topic? So I'm going to just read through these. You know, it's always important to think about what we could actually think about if it's something that strikes a chord with us. And again, this is not to say that within our schools, we don't have teachers and school therapists already working well with our students, but you know, they talked about acknowledging that test anxiety is a major concern, that that we make strong use of our school-based mental health professionals. I know we've got a lot of great mental health professionals in our district. They talked about focusing on prevention, allowing school psychologists and other based mental health professionals to provide class-wide trainings. So that's a little bit what that tier two was, just talking about kind of like push-in type sessions like we do for our kindergartners, which with speech therapy, for example. Training administrators and teachers. Let's see. I think I did not go forward. Continuing education, knowing where our students receive mental health support, and embracing expansion of roles under MTTS. So I copied a lot of information there. But the main point about this, because I think that was my last slide on this, go back for one second on this topic, was just that I thought it was an interesting thing. You know, we're talking about so many kids opting out of tests. I'm hearing more frequently parents and people that I know using the word anxiety when talking about their kids. So it was interesting that it was a topic there and that there were some sort of general idea that they had, sort of, you know, including this general screening. So that is that topic. If anyone has any questions, I think I would just stop for a second. Or it's just to kind of put some thoughts in your head and explain what I learned there. Okay, moving on to the next. So the next session that I attended was teaching students to respect diversity. And the presenters were our superintendent of East Ramapo. She was up there. She is great energy. The superintendent of Buffalo, Westbury, and Roosevelt. I'm just going to touch on this briefly. What really struck me here is that these schools have extremely challenging demographics. The level of poverty, the number of languages spoke. I know we've got children speaking multiple languages, but it was just ridiculous numbers of languages. Teen pregnancies, it was just about at schools that have changed so drastically in the past few years with immigrants and just shifting demographics. And again, there were just some, these were just some of the different messages that were there. All the way up was the superintendent from East Ramapo. She had all these, this amazing film that she did with all her teachers, and the theme was all the way up, and it was really just about getting buy-in from your staff. She talked about what Dr. Montesano talks about all the time, growth versus fixed mindset. So district with guaranteed pathways to opportunities that will lead to achievement and success. So, oh, this was Buffalo. Just a lot about community and parent buy-in, and a lot about project-based learning. So anyway, to me, this was important, but so many of the things that I heard were things that I felt like I hear Dr. Montesano talking about frequently. So that was just one slide on that session. This was an interesting session, I thought. It was about homework and grading, reflecting on current instructional research and best practice. Now, one of the interesting things about this, because, you know, when you first read the title, I really didn't think it was going to have anything to do with diversity and social justice. I thought I was just learning about homework and grading. But it was really about how looking at implicit bias and social justice and you know, a district that was really looking at how their grading and homework policies really sort of benefited all of their students. And they were really looking at it as a social justice issue. You know, so this particular district had really, they had decided to do a comprehensive review of their grading and homework policies. Let's see, things that we typically do, surveys, gathering stakeholder feedback, but they made it, you know, one of their major areas of concern. They developed or reworked their board policies on grading and homework. You know, and really kind of try to define what those two things meant. So really kind of dig deep into what grading and homework mean. They determined that grading is the measurement of student learning. And the homework side, separate policy, homework extends student learning by reinforcing content and skills taught in the school. So, you know, going back to the grading side, they really went through and defined the bullet point of what that meant to measure student learning. Some of the bullet points were feedback to students about learning, parental monitoring of learning, consistency, that was a big one, consistency in grading practices, weighting of grade components, measurement of learning and growth, not credit for non-academic factors. You know, they really talked a lot about, are you going to affect a kid's grade if they don't do their homework, they don't turn it in on time. Mm-hmm. It was something that they really wanted to dig and figure out what was really a measure of student achievement. Standardization of grading system, not used as a punitive measure. You know, one of the things that they talked about is sort of, when you read through it, it might almost feel to teachers like it becomes more restrictive,
but it was really the opposite. It was sort of about giving teachers almost more flexibility than always saying, you know what, I've got this 10%, 40%, 50%. It was about maybe giving teachers the flexibility to even be more flexible in their grading systems when they're really looking at what grading is all about. So that was interesting. And then homework. You know, a lot of people in the session were saying, wait, tell us exactly what you mean by homework guidelines. You know, tell us what you found out. And there wasn't really a lot of what you found out. I mean, the one little specific was they said, and I've read this in other places, the standard is 10 minutes per grade. So, you know, kindergarten, you get 10 minutes of homework. First grade, you get 20 minutes of homework. Third grade, 30 grade, 30 minutes. I don't know. To me, you get it to high school, and that's a lot of homework. But anyway, it was just about looking at what homework means. And it's directly related to your stated learning objectives, short and frequent assignments, student able to complete it on their own. It's really, I think, mostly, again, not used as a punitive measure, but it's about giving that feedback to students. So let's see. I can't remember if I had another slide on this one or not. No, that was my last slide. So I thought that was, I mean, homework and grading is so important. So I thought that was some interesting information. Anyone have any questions before I move on to my next session? Okay. Moving on. This is my one and only slide on this. How to activate student achievement in math class and beyond. Essentially, it was all about task-based learning and games. I know we've got some good games in elementary school. I put 24 because I meant to bring it with me. Has anybody played 24? Yeah. Board members, has anybody played 24? All right, I'm going to have to remember to bring it. It is. I know we've done it in our elementary schools. Dr. Mazzani, you know what 24 is, right? Do you know? Let me tell you.
No, I don't. I 21 blackjack. That's about it.
All right. Well, you know, they whipped out a game. It's cards. And on each card, there's two sides, but there are four numbers. Gina, please correct me if I'm wrong. It's four numbers, right? And you have to use whatever math, you know, addition, subtraction, division, with those four numbers to get them to equal 24. So I should have brought it because it was just one of those things you're like, oh my gosh, that is so great. So I think we've done 24 competitions, right? I know we've done Rubik's Cube. I know we've done a lot of fun things. So that was can't talk extensively about anything, but it was about fun learning games, which I think we do some of. All right, this one, the state of public education. Dr. Christopher Linden, how do you improve education and empower youth? This was one of those big sessions with this super high energy level speaker. I'm just going to read down some things that he said. You can follow him on Twitter. Probably somewhere else. I follow him on Twitter, although I don't really use Twitter. But he was somebody who had a lot of great energy about just the great things that you could do with education and teachers and teaching. He talked about minorities becoming the majority in a highly segregated state, non-traditional family structures becoming the norm. It was all about, you know, call to action, a vision of how we as a state can make an impact in public education, girls outperforming boys, it was a lot about using new models. Music in the schools, kind of like the Pentecostal church. He wrote a book for white folks that teach in the hood and others too. It sounded like an interesting book. He talked a lot about project-based learning too. I have to say the project-based learning thing came up frequently at this convention. So I thought it was kind of something good to emphasize because, I don't know, maybe it's something we could think about more or maybe we do more of it than I even know of. Communication is my next session, essential communication partners, the board, superintendent, and public information specialist. This is one slide, too, because Lisa's not here tonight, but I feel like we really do communicate well with our communication specialist. It's about speaking with one voice. I feel like we as a board have talked about this a lot. I just put up there a couple of unique ideas, which maybe I'll just share with Lisa. There was a question of the week developed by their communications director to address a message that seems unclear at a board meeting. So I thought this was kind of interesting. If it's something that we think is important and we feel like is maybe being misunderstood or we just want to communicate more, kind of doing this question of the week that you put up on your website and think about other ways to shoot it out to your community. And I thought a successogram was fun. It was a way to thank someone who goes above and beyond. Kind of frequently, kind of more smaller
above and beyond, and you put them up on the website, and you recognize people at a board meeting. So I know we do a lot of recognitions, but it was kind of maybe for smaller yet important things that we typically recognize. Wait, let me just see if this is... All right, this was kind of important. I think this is my last thing. The business meeting. You know, so I go up there, you send a representative to the annual business meeting to vote on all of the resolutions. And we talked about those prior to me going. So a little fact, over 2,500 attendees, over 400 school boards represented. You know, they talked a little bit about some new NISBA items, additional staff attorney, online courses, more free webinars. They created a member relations department, more outreach, redesigned the Capitol Conference. Those were like their big, here's what we did. These were the resolutions. So I will say, I was really disappointed that the Article 6 A and B did not pass. You need a two-thirds majority to pass. This was the resolution to have a member from the Black Caucus be appointed to NISBA. Right now, the NISBA Board of Directors is very geographical. You know, you've got a representative from each geographic area to represent you on the board. And I will say, the board was looking pretty white. You know, so the proposal was there's a Black Caucus. It's school board members who are Black. They had a couple special meetings. And I think maybe anybody could be invited, because I kept getting invited to go to the Black Caucus meeting. So I thought it was just, you know, maybe it's just having a focus on Black students in the state. But anyway, 63% of the votes it got, you need 66% to pass. A little surprised by that one. Resolution 5 did not pass. Oh, about teacher and principal 5-year renewable contract. And again, the resolutions, they guide NISBA's advocacy efforts. So it doesn't mean that these were things that were going to happen. They were just things that NISBA would then advocate for throughout the year. So these were all things that we had said we voted yes on, and they didn't pass. Giving teachers the option to join defined contribution retirement plans. Actually, I think we had said no to this one anyway, Resolution 15 and 16, about GEA restoration. I think we had said there's already been a lot of, we got the GEA restored already, why kind of keep focusing on that one thing? And that we had talked a little bit about that internal, changing the internal audit system. That did not pass either. And then there was a new resolution that kind of came off the floor that resolved that NISBA works with SED to establish an option to replace, this is about data privacy. PII was unique. They didn't get into it, but I really explained it that well, but it's about the whole student privacy and sort of ensuring that students' personal information is not mistakenly released. Sorry, I forgot. I had one more thing after that, because it was a long weekend. So that was the business meeting. Any questions on the business meeting and the resolutions?
In terms of the Resolution 6, did you vote on that as an individual school district on behalf of this district?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We had all of Rockland County, you know, we had had
you
Rockland
had
County
had
School Board Association sort of advise us.
Okay.
Rockland County School Board. Yeah, it kind of felt like, I don't know, I have to say, it was disappointing. I felt like when I saw a school board member of color after that, you said, I'm so sorry. You know, I was really surprised, because I felt like at this convention that I heard people talking about unconscious bias and implicit bias and diversity issues somewhat consistently. I don't feel like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, maybe this is me, maybe I just wasn't knowledgeable, but I don't feel like the words unconscious or implicit bias were used frequently. And I heard those words being used so often, and then that resolution didn't pass. So to me, it just kind of indicated, I think people aren't really getting it yet. But that was the case. It will be back on the table next year, I am sure. And 63%, I can't imagine it's not going to hit 66% next year. After that, I attended two more. I'm sorry. This was the teacher and principal probation and tenure. Again, a couple of important things. They were talking about a probable cause hearing in student abuse cases. Essentially, if Ralph was here, he'd probably say the same thing, but they said, you should probably never go to a probable cause hearing. I could explain why if we ever had that situation come up. They mentioned a new law. If a child is under 14 as a witness in a hearing, you know, with a teacher who's done something wrong, that child does not have to be in the court. They could be in a separate room and be videotaped in. You talked a little bit about APPR, because I don't know about you guys, but I always feel like it's been a little confusing to me, so many changes in the APPR over the years. So they were just highlighting that it still is the case if a teacher gets two consecutive ineffective ratings, a district can bring a case against them. If they get three consecutive ineffective ratings, you must bring a case against them. The presenter said this new process, it's all still ineffective in his opinion. Essentially, one of the reasons he thought was because you have some hearings officers who are still biased. And he just was talking about if you do have an issue, that it just boils down to really meticulously reporting everything. Oh, Ralph, you are still there. Sorry, right in front of me. sorry. So it's just all about really documenting if you ever have an issue.
Sorry, Jen, could you go back to that previous slide?
Yes.
Maybe I'm late and tired. I don't understand what the first two points have to do with teacher and principal probation and tenure.
They were talking about if a teacher does something wrong, has some sort of a sexual abuse issue, something that your teacher does wrong, and now the district is taking them to, Ralph, help me here if I'm wrong, but taking you to filing.
I think what they're referring to is teacher disciplinary charges under New York State Education Law Section 3028. Is what I believe that's referring to.
Does that clarify, Karen? So you essentially...
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other millions of things we could quote as well. I just wondered why we had these two points. I mean, there are so many issues that you could bring up with teacher probation and tenure. I just wondered why these two were called. It doesn't matter.
To me, it was just you're listening and you're writing down things that...
Just
it was this whole thing about you could have a probable... cause hearing before your actual hearing? Does that sound right?
Yes.
And they were essentially saying that if this ever comes up, their advice was don't ever have a probable cause hearing. It's simply going to hurt your real hearing case. So if we ever got there, we can go back and I can probably gather more, or Ralph would probably completely advise us on this correctly anyway. And then this too, this was about if there is a trial, a teacher being... a teacher trial for something being done wrong that a child, a witness, does not have to be in the room. So say it is a case of sexual abuse, that if the child's under 14, they don't have to be in the courtroom. They can give their testimony from another room, which is interesting. Okay. And then this was about shifting to restorative and equitable school-wide discipline and support. The superintendent of the Syracuse School District spoke, and the president of their board. I'm going to talk a little about Syracuse. I never realized sort of Syracuse's demographics of, a lot of kids on free and reduced lunch. It's quite a poor area. And they really had been found to not be administering discipline to all of their students equitably, students of color. So, they were talking about implicit bias and unconscious bias in their district. Which, again, this was just another session where this was coming up. Their suspension rates were very high, and the big thing, more suspension rates equates with lower graduation rates. So, I mean, to me, this was kind of one slide. I feel like we talk a lot about what we're doing to address the needs of all of our students and our students who might be, students of poverty. And so it was just some... interesting information, and again, it was going back to this, that there really was found to be implicit bias and unconscious bias, and they had actually rewritten their entire code of conduct in a much more positive, another way. They talked a lot about the restorative approach to discipline. They were very specific about talking to teachers about what can be handled in the classroom, kind of bringing a little bit more back into the classroom. So, students... talking out of turn. Everything wasn't, down to the principal's office. It was kind of giving teachers more training and more power to handle things within the classroom. Being a little bit more descriptive. What does being disrespectful mean? That could be different to lots of different people. So let's really think about what this means. And I put in big caps, to be ever considered training our dean of students, security guards, in implicit bias and unconscious bias. I think that's why I highlighted there, because I thought, our dean of students is someone who is working directly with students all the time on disciplinary issues. So just something to think about. And our security guards, you know, they're out there talking to students and dealing with disciplinary issues. So, you know, it's about a lot about bringing parents into the loop as well and educating them. Now I'm really done. Any questions, anyone?
Any questions for Jen?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for sending me.
Thanks, Jen. Okay. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on any action items? Okay. Do we have a motion to accept items 3.2, 3.4, and 3.5?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Action item 3.3. Do we have a motion to accept action item 3.3, special education recommendations?
Motion.
Second. Discussion?
Yeah, if the board will indulge, I'd like to read a statement that has been prepared with the help of our legal counsel just to explain my vote before the vote actually takes place. So if you'll, like I said, indulge me, it's a bit of a long statement, but here goes. I'm abstaining from the vote on approval of the recommendations of the Committee on Preschool Special Education. I have informed the Board of Education and Superintendent of Schools that my wife owns a company that has a contract with Rockland County to be on the list of approved preschool special education service providers for preschool special education children who reside in Rockland County, which obviously includes the Nyack Public Schools. I am abstaining as a precaution in order to avoid any appearance of impropriety, since the recommendations may include preschool special education children who receive services from my wife's company. The Board of Education has reviewed this matter with its attorney. The New York State preschool special education system is funded and overseen by the local counties and administered through the local public school districts in each county. The contract for my wife's company is with Rockland County, not the Nyack Public Schools. The monies paid to my wife's company are paid by Rockland County, not the Nyack Public Schools. Also, I have been told by the superintendent of schools that the choice of which preschool special education service provider to use from the Rockland County approved list is made by parents, guardians, not the Nyack Public Schools.
Thanks very much, Dana. Any other discussion? Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
For the record, we'll note that Trustee Bender has abstained from this vote. Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, business items, anything to call out?
No, just that 4.4, that one large bus, that is in our response to the overcrowding conditions we had. So we've added at the high school on some of the routes, we have added an additional route that seems to be working effectively.
Excellent. Thank you. Do we have a motion to accept business action items 4.1 to 4.7?
Motion.
Second. Discussion?
Just commend Dr. Montesano on the quick and speedy resolution of action item 4.4.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you, Dr. Montesano.
Thank you, Carleen.
Urban.
Yeah, and just thank you to the Nyack Tower Fund for their donation and their continued efforts and their interest in preserving the look of the old high school and our new building. Thank you to their efforts, and thank you for the donation.
Agreed.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, person.
Just, I continue to be personally impressed with the staff members that continue to participate so effectively at Waldron Terrace. There's a few of them on the list for tonight, and we're very excited to see that program continue. And very grateful for our local assembly men, assembly women, and also Senator Carlucci for the continued support of that program.
Fantastic. Thanks. Do we have a
Do we have a motion to accept action items 5.1 through 5.9?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
We are adjourned.